Good morning.
Good morning.
A mom's smiles can brighten any moment. A mom's hug put joy in all our days. A mom's love will stay with us forever and touch our lives in precious ways. The values they have taught, the care that they have given, and the wonderful love they have shown have enriched our lives in more ways than we can count. Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers that may be out there. I know we've said that a couple of times this morning, but I wanted to share my sentiments as well. The lesson this morning, while not specifically to mothers, does have characteristics in it that I think definitely apply to all mothers. Early this year, I talked about and suggested that I would give some lessons as I went forward about how to be more Christ-like in 2019, and that's what this morning continues along those lines. You know, like most boys, when I was growing up, I was fascinated with sports. I mean, I just had a general love for sports, and it didn't matter. I played baseball, basketball, football, soccer. It didn't matter whatever time and season of the year it was. We were not specialized in any one sport. We just played whatever sport it was. And when you think about sports and you think about all the different rules, the different strategies, you think about the different equipment, the different fields, you think about even the different number of teammates that you may have. I mean, even the balls were all different in their shape, their size, their color. And as I progressed into whatever sport I was in, the competition got tougher. As you learn and as you grew and as the physical nature of the game changed, so did the players. So did the size of the fields. Even the technical and the technical skills and the knowledge that you had surrounding those games. Think about something like baseball. You start off hitting off a tee. Then you may have a coach that pitches it in a general direction. He knows you can hit it. Then you got to hit some kid coming up now that kind of a little wild at times. And then you get even older and they can really throw the ball hard. Okay? So every time something changed, and as I reached high school, I recognized real quickly that because of my size, I was not going to be a professional athlete. So I decided to change my way in the sports world, and I learned how to become a trainer. Learned how to tape ankles. Learned how to handle basic injuries. Learned how to do different things that were needed to help the athletes be ready for whenever game time was. But as I remained working with those athletes and I remained in the different sports that I was in, I was fortunate enough to be around a couple of great athletes, two in particular. One, in my sophomore year, we were lucky enough to win the Alabama State Championship in football. It was a 4A classification. It was the highest classification at the time. It was always the toughest classification because that's where all the big schools were at. And we were led by a gentleman named Larry Roberts, who later went on to play for 8 years in the NFL with the San Francisco 49ers as a defensive lineman. And in my senior year, kid that I had grown up with, Barry Hightower, tall, lanky left-hander who could throw in the 90s and had a curveball that just, you know, as a left-handed hitter, I was always hitting the ground. I mean, it was coming at my head, but somehow it would always curve in there for a strike. He was drafted straight out of high school by the New York Mets. Elite athletes, both, in their own right. But as I look back at those athletes now, I look back at what made them those great athletes. And I would suggest to you, there's five characteristics that made them successful. And that's what I want to spend a few minutes this morning talking about. They all had a great desire for victory. They all were committed to their work. All were involved in helping their teams. All made sacrifices to get better. And all endured rigorous practices and training regimens just to reach their goals. Again, I said for our mothers, I think they can all say yes to that, right? Desire, committed, involved, sacrifices, endured. But these five characteristics are found throughout the Bible, and it's characteristics that we need, both men and women need to have, if we're going to live our lives in an effort to be more Christ-like. So as we go through this morning, I want to take a look at some of these characteristics and see what the Bible has to say about them. I want to talk about desire. I want to talk about commitment. I want to talk about involvement. I want to talk about sacrifice and endurance. We're going to begin with endurance. And, you know, every other year, if you think about it, we're afforded the opportunity to watch the Olympics. 2 years, it's Winter Olympics. 2 years later, it's Summer Olympics. We got on this rotation several years ago. But when you look at the athletes that compete in the various Olympic events, you soon see their strong desire that each of those athletes have. Ultimately, the goal is to win the gold medal, but a lot of times desire comes through those maybe that's not even on the medal stand. I remember years ago in a marathon, a lady running toward the end of the marathon had dehydrated herself so bad she could barely walk. She could almost to a point that she was crawling. But her goal was to finish that race, and her goal was to get to the end of that, to get to that finish line. Her desire propelled her to get through that. An Olympian's desire is so strong that they shut everything else out of their lives and they focus on their training, expressing them through exhaustion, through sicknesses, through aches, through pains, sometimes through injuries that they have to endure, yet they remain focused on their goal. Desire can be defined as an athlete's drive. It's their longing. It's their craving. It's the motivational emotion that pushes someone to reach for their goal. It's a longing. It's an earnest and endearing need for fulfilling that goal or that achievement, even though it may take a great deal of time to reach. And it's a craving, an intense emotion, an intense desire that forces us to chase after something, to fulfill that need that we have, much like that of hunger. And yet we need to have that same desire if we want to reach our gold medal. In Luke 19, we find the story of a small man who has desire to see Jesus. Beginning in verse 1, the scripture says, "He entered Jericho and was passing through, and behold, there was a man named Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was rich, and he was seeking to see who Jesus was, but on account of the crowd, he could not, because he was small in stature. So he ran on ahead and climbed up into a sycamore tree to see him, for he was about to pass that way. And when Jesus came to the place, he looked up and said to him, 'Zacchaeus, hurry and come down, for I must stay at your house today.' So he hurried and came down and received him joyfully." Now, think about what we know about Zacchaeus. Tax collector, rich, probably could have bought his way in to be able to see Jesus along the way somewhere. But he was small in stature, and instead of trying to fight the crowds, he decides to climb up into a sycamore tree. And how surprised, how happy do you think he was when he saw Jesus coming his way? His longing to see his master, his craving to try to find a way to get that done even though he was small in stature, his drive pushing him into action, into climbing that tree, and his desire where he was rewarded as he received him joyfully. Like Zacchaeus, we need to have that same drive. We need to have that same longing. We need to have that same craving. We need to have that desire to see Christ. Another good example is found in Mark chapter 2, in verses 1 through 5, where it says, "And when he returned to Capernaum after some days, it was reported that he was at home, and many were gathered together so that there was no more room, not even at the door. And he was preaching the word to them, and they came bringing to him a paralytic carried by four men. And when they could not get near him because of the crowd, they removed the roof above him. And when they had made an opening, they let down the bed on which the paralytic lay. And when Jesus saw their faith, he said to the paralytic, 'Son, your sins are forgiven.'" Like Zacchaeus, these men had a strong desire to see Jesus. They didn't allow the crowds to stop them. Obviously, knowing who Jesus was and believing Jesus could heal their paralytic, their desire to bring him to Jesus, their desire led them to overcome the obstacle of the crowd. Their desire paid off as Jesus healed the man. If we want to see Jesus, we must be determined to get where he is. We must not let anything get in our way. We cannot afford to let things of this world stop us. Our desire to see Jesus must be greater than any other desire that we face. We know the 11th chapter of Hebrew, and we often refer to that as the heroes of faith. You've got Abel, Enoch, you've got Noah, Abraham, Sarah. They're all listed there as men and women with great faith. But as verse 16 explains, they had a desire for a better country. That is a heavenly one. Therefore, God is named to be ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared for them a city. Along with desire, we see also in these examples, commitment. You've got to be committed to reaching your goal. Commitment. It's that state where we're bound physically, we're bound emotionally, we're bound intellectually to an ideal or a course of action. It's a pledge or a promise to do something. I am committed to my job because it's one that I accepted the responsibilities of. I'm physically, I'm emotionally, I'm intellectually bound to that. I want to lead in my job because it is a promise that I've given to my employer that I would do. When you think about the athlete, it's easy to see how committed they have to be. They put forth their knowledge. They put forth their strength to be the best in their field. They spend long, long hours, those hours that we never really get to see in training. We get to see hours conditioning themselves. You know, I think about Tim and his running and how he's spoken to us at times. The actual event that he's in is the reward, right? The actual event is the reward. It's all the other miles and hours and days that he's put into getting ready for that. The athlete is very much the same way. We need to be the same way. To reach heaven, we've got to commit ourselves to do the same type of spiritual training. We must learn all we can while we're here to inherit the kingdom. Luke 10 and 27 encourage us to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength, and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself. That verse talks about the physical, the emotional, the intellectual that we have to give, the love that we've got to have with our soul. We commit ourselves to God by becoming his servants. Romans 6, chapter 16 through 18 says, "Do you not know that if you present yourselves to anyone as obedient servants, you are servants of one whom you obey, either of sin, which leads to death, or obedience, which leads to righteousness. But thanks be to God that you who were once slaves of sin have become obedient from the heart to the standard of teaching to which you were committed, and having been set free from sin, you have become servants of righteousness." We must all have confidence. We must all have trust in the one to whom we have committed ourselves to. 2 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 12, Paul explains to Timothy, "For this reason I also suffer these things. Nevertheless, I am not ashamed, for I know whom I have believed and am persuaded that he is able to keep what I have committed to him until that day." When we talk about biblical examples of somebody that's committed, perhaps Daniel is the one that comes to mind for me. Being brought into the king's palace, not only to serve the king, but he's also taught the language and the literature of the Chaldeans. He's given the same food as the king. And yet, this was against his religious upbringing. It was against his religious teaching. Daniel chapter 1, verse 8 says, "But Daniel resolved that he would not defile himself with the king's food or with the wine that he drank. Therefore, he asked the chief of the eunuchs to allow him not to defile himself." This really was the beginning to show Daniel's commitment to God. Years later, under the rule of Darius the Mede, Daniel again demonstrated his commitment to the Lord. Jealous counterparts knew of Daniel's devotion to God, knew that he was going to be praying to his God, and convinced Darius to pass a law that prohibited anyone to call upon God or any other man other than Darius. There was penalty for violation of this, and Daniel knew the law, but it didn't stop him from praying to God. The men caught him praying, and they brought this to the king's attention, that Daniel was transgressing the king's new law. How dare he transgress something that the king had put in? They demanded punishment. In chapter 6, beginning at verse 16 and going through 23, it says, "Then the king commanded, and Daniel was brought and cast into the den of lions. The king declared to Daniel, 'May your God, whom you serve continually, deliver you.' And a stone was brought and laid on the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet and with the signet of his lords, that nothing might be changed concerning Daniel. Then the king went into his palace and spent the night fasting. No diversions were brought to him, and sleep fled from him. Then at the break of day, the king arose and went in haste to the den of lions. As he came near to the den where Daniel was, he cried out in a tone of anguish. The king declared to Daniel, 'O Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to deliver you from the lions?' Then Daniel said to the king, 'O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the lions' mouths, and they have not harmed me, because I was found blameless before him. And also before you, O king, I have done no harm.' Then the king was exceedingly glad and commanded that Daniel be taken up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no kind of harm was found on him, because he had trusted in his God." Daniel's commitment was known by all. Those that were jealous of him knew of his practices of prayer. They knew how important prayer was to him. They could count on that commitment that he had to believe what, to lead them what they believed would be his destruction. He didn't waver in his commitment. He didn't waver in his devotion to God. We need to make sure we have that same kind of commitment. We need to have that same kind of devotion. We need to look to Daniel as that great example of what it means to be committed. He did not keep his faith concealed. He didn't try to hide it. He was not ashamed of his God. He was committing to serving God no matter what he might have to suffer. But just as you got to have desire, just as you have to be committed, there's also a sense of involvement. With desire, with commitment, with involvement, great things can be accomplished. But you can't stand on the sideline. An athlete can't go through all the hours of training and not get into the action. He's got to be an active participant in whatever it is they're trying to do. Involvement is that engagement. It's an active engagement. It's an active obligation that you've got. And there are several people in the Bible who shows this type of involvement, but perhaps there's no one better than the Apostle Peter. When you think about Peter, obviously one of the best known among Jesus' 12 apostles, a native of Bethsaida. He and his brother Andrew, part of a fishing family growing up there. But from the beginning of his apostleship, Peter stood out. He involved himself. He's often noted as being kind of the spokesman of the group. He's known for his zeal, known for his strong nature. But by no means was he perfect. Think about it. It was Peter, James, and John who often appeared with Jesus on special occasions, such as the Transfiguration or in the garden just before Jesus' betrayal and arrest. It was Peter who confessed, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." It was Peter who tried to defend Jesus when they came to arrest Jesus by cutting off the ear of Malchus. It was Peter that denied Jesus not once, but three times, even after Jesus predicted he would do so. And it was Peter, even after denying Christ, who would stand and deliver the first gospel sermon that would change the world forever. His involvement led to 3,000 hearing the message and being baptized. For us to reach our spiritual goal, we must be involved. This is my plug for teachers. We need teachers. Right, John? Always in need looking for teachers. You can be involved by being a teacher. We need those who are willing to participate in the teaching program and involved in leading during the worship service. But there's other works we can do. There's personal evangelism. There's benevolence. There's hospitality. There's prayer. All those are works that we can all be involved in. And you know, it's well known that you gain much more when you're involved. The end of Tim's race is a great reward because he's been involved in something that he's been training to do. Bystanders can stand by and watch, but it's not the same satisfaction of those who have trained and get involved in the race. And it's not just a reward for us. It's a reward for those that we impact along the way. I'm going to talk more about the U.S. hockey team in just a moment, but think back to 1980, the Miracle on Ice. It didn't have an impact just on those players that were there, but there are stories about how it changed the United States forever, politically, economically, all because a few college men got together on a hockey team and kind of upset the world. There was a nation that also reveled in their victory. The next characteristics that I want to look at is that of sacrifice. And this is perhaps maybe the most overlooked characteristic that we think about when we think about elite athletes, because we really don't know of the sacrifices that they have to make. Sacrifice is the forfeiture of something highly valued for the sake of something with a greater value. I remember in college, I first heard of Todd Marinovich. Now, maybe you don't know who Todd Marinovich is, but coming out of high school and being a sports fan, I know that Todd Marinovich was the number one recruited quarterback in the United States. I know that he ended up going to Southern Cal. I know he was later drafted by the Oakland Raiders. I also learned that his father prepared him to be the number one quarterback. I also know the sacrifices that his father helped Todd develop so that he could become that elite athlete. I learned that Todd Marinovich had never eaten a Happy Meal. Now, I want you to think about that for a minute. For those of you that were growing up in the same time period that I did, how do you not eat a Happy Meal? I mean, it was a staple around our house. We were so involved in different sporting events that the easy thing to do was go through the drive-thru either before or after, and you got a Happy Meal. How can he not go through 18, 20 years without a Happy Meal? But his father had taught him that that had to be a sacrifice he had to make if he wanted to be an elite athlete. Spiritually, we need to make sacrifices as well. We cannot live in the world. We cannot live like the world while in the world. We cannot give way to sin, and we cannot forego our training for other activities. The Hebrew writer tells us some of the trials of those who sacrifice. In chapter 11, in verses 32 through 38, it says, "And what more shall I say? For time would fail me to tell of Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, of David and Samuel, and of the prophets, who through faith conquered kingdoms, enforced justice, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the power of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, were made strong out of weakness, became mighty in war, put foreign armies to flight. Women received back their dead by resurrection. Some were tortured, refusing to accept release, so that they might rise again to a better life. Others suffered mocking and flogging and even chains and imprisonments. They were stoned, they were sawn in two, they were killed with a sword. They went about in skins of sheep and goats, destitute, afflicted, mistreated, of whom the world was not worthy, wandering about in deserts and mountains and in dens and caves of the earth. Doesn't really sound like something that we all want to endure, right? But Paul, when he's talking of his perils and his work for Christ in 2 Corinthians 11, says, 5 times I received at the hands of the Jews, the 40 lashes less one. 3 times I was beaten with rods. 1 I was stoned. 3 times I was shipwrecked. 1 day and 1 night I was adrift at sea, on frequent journeys, in dangers from rivers, dangers from robbers, dangers from my own people, dangers from Gentiles, danger in the city, danger in the wilderness, danger at sea, danger from false brothers, in toil and hardship, through many a sleepless night, in hunger and thirst, often without food, in cold and exposure. And apart from other things, there is daily pressure on me of my anxiety for all the churches. I mean, many of us are never going to face the type of trials that Paul said he endured here. We're not going to face shipwreck. We're not going to face being beaten with rods. We're not going to have to be exposed to hunger or to thirst. But Paul, that same Paul that just talked about all that he went through, instructs us to be a living sacrifice for Christ. In Romans 12, 1 and 2, it says, I appeal to you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern that what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. We are the embodiment of Christ. And our lives should reflect the same love and the same sacrifice he had for us. It was he, after all, that loved us enough to die for us, so that we could have hope of everlasting life. And finally, while great athletes have desire, commitment, involvement, and sacrifice, they must also demonstrate great endurance. Endurance is the ability to last, to continue, to remain. It's the ability to perhaps withstand pain, distress, and fatigue. Soldiers are often remembered for their endurance. I remember my grandfather served in World War II, and he didn't talk much about the war. But I do remember my grandmother saying that he often found himself in a strange land that he knew nothing about. He was often tired. He was often cold. He was often hungry. And more often than not, he often found himself afraid. Yet, he and the other members of the army continued to fight for the cause because they were dedicated to it. He was able to endure the hardships that he had to go through. And no matter how hard it is to remain faithful, Jesus endured to the end. He was committed to serving his Father. Many people want to be known as children of God, but when suffer comes along, they tend to want to stop being children of God. We have to be able to endure what life can throw at us. The Olympian is not one that quits. Their desire to succeed overwhelmingly keeps them going. It keeps them from just falling down and giving in to the temptation to simply stop. They have to keep going. When you think about the Bible, obviously there's one person that comes to mind when you talk about endurance, and that being Job. He was blameless. He was upright. He was one who feared God. He was one that turned away from evil. We know that all from chapter 1 and verse 1 of Job. He was a wealthy man. Had a good family, large family, seemed happy. Through the work of the devil, all of this would be taken away. Job 1, 13 through 21 says, Now there was a day when his sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house, and there came a messenger to Job and said, The oxen were plowing, and the donkeys feeding beside them. And the Sabaeans fell upon them and took them and struck down the servants with the edge of the sword, and I alone have escaped to tell you. While he was yet speaking, there came another and said, The fire of God fell from heaven and burned up the sheep and the servants and consumed them. And I alone have escaped to tell you. And while he was yet speaking, there came another and said, "The Chaldeans formed three groups and made a raid on the camels and took them and struck down the servants with the edge of the sword. And I alone have escaped to tell you." And while he was yet speaking, there came another and said, "Your sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house. And behold, a great wind came across the wilderness and struck the four corners of the house. And it fell upon the young people. And they are dead. And I alone have escaped to tell you." Then Job arose, tore his robe, and shaved his head and fell to the ground and worshipped. And he said, "Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked shall I return. The Lord gave and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." He had lost his riches, lost his children, yet he did not turn away from serving God. But Satan wasn't through with him yet. If you look later in chapter 2, he began to attack Job's health, covering him with painful boils from head to toe. His wife began to turn on him, asking him to curse God and to die. And later his friends concluded that Job's suffering must be the result of some terrible sin that Job had done. And this was God's punishment. Instead of providing comfort, they just caused him more suffering. Yet through it all, Job endured. He never wavered in his faith. He continued to love God. As I mentioned earlier, the U.S. hockey team, there's perhaps no greater sports story to this nation than that hockey team. You know, it's been nearly four decades since that team shocked the world. A bunch of ragtag college players pulled together from across the country, each receiving an invite to represent their country. Imagine the pride they had in getting that invite. Back then it would have been in the mail, right? There would have been no email. It would have been in the mail. Imagine the pride that they got. They left their homes, their friends, their family. They left their college teammates. They endured grueling hours of tryouts and practices. They suffered an embarrassing loss to the Russians just days before the Olympics. Yet they endured. They continued pushing forward and found themselves involved in the greatest sports upset in history. They had a great desire to succeed. They committed themselves to the long hours of training. Each member involved having a unique role to their skill set, all making personal sacrifices, all enduring to the end, to ultimately stand on the award stand, each holding their gold medal in triumph. Our gold medal awaits us. It's a mansion of gold. Jesus promised such, and that promise is recorded for us in John 14, 1 and 3, when he said, "Let not your hearts be troubled. Believe in God. Believe also in me. In my Father's house are many rooms. If it were not so, would I have told you that? I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and will take you to myself, that where I am, you may be also." For us to succeed, we must have that intense desire to see God. We must be committed to having a Christ-like life. Be involved in spiritual matters and be willing to sacrifice the things of the world. Through all this life has to offer, we have to endure, knowing that our reward awaits. We read this morning from 2 Timothy 4, chapter 4, verses 7 and 8. And I'm going to close out by reading those verses again. It says, "I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Henceforth there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day. And not only me, but also to all who have loved his appearing." This morning, what's your level of desire? Are you longing for victory? How committed are you to the goal, to the work that needs to be done? Are you involved? Are you working on yourself to be more Christ-like? Are you making the sacrifices that keeps you on that heavenly pathway? And are you enduring? Are you keeping that course, knowing that our home is in heaven? The attempt invitation is open to those who may be in need of prayers. Perhaps you've not yet obeyed the gospel. You've not started that journey trying to reach our Lord. But today is the greatest day to begin that journey. We stand ready to assist if you've not started that journey. Or perhaps you've already been dipped in the waters of baptism, yet you're not as committed as you need to. Or maybe this life has cast upon you some struggles for which you need the prayers of the brethren. We're here ready to assist. We look forward to helping those who may be in need. As we conclude today's lesson, let's remember the characteristics that we need to have so that we too can be successful. We need to have the desire. We need to be committed. We need to be involved, be willing to sacrifice, and have the endurance to the end. Whatever your need may be, we ask that you come while together we stand and we sing.